This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Welcome to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanisan. The global market for vertical farmed produce is forecasted to grow from $781 million in 2020 to $1.5 billion by 2030, representing a compounded annual growth rate of just under 7%. Now, founded in 2013, Sustena Agriculture was armed with $15 million in Series A funding from Grog Ventures and Temasek Holdings, and the company is now in three markets. But while vertical farming seems promising, how far can this business grow, considering that it seems to be a nice to have instead of a growing necessity? To find out, I'm speaking with Benjamin Swan, CEO and co-founder of Sustena Agriculture. Benjamin, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Roshan, thank you for having me.
So, Benjamin, vertical farming isn't necessarily new. In Japan, there are over 200 vertical farms currently operating, producing around 30,000 heads of lettuce every day, just for context there. And this is in the highly automated Techno Farm Kehana plant. Are those aspirations in line with your own, but for your key producers like strawberries and kale?
You're right. The industry isn't exactly new. And to be honest, hydroponics isn't something that's quite new either. I mean, I think the first farm in history recorded was executed or commissioned by Julius Caesar. So hydroponics has been around for a very, very long time. I would say that Sustena is one of the pioneers in this space. Having founded the company back in 2013, it was very conceptual at that point. My journey started as a guy who actually just wanted a great salad. Having moved to Singapore from Australia that has an abundance of fresh produce, I became very frustrated with the quality of produce that was in Singapore. And it wasn't the retailer's fault. It wasn't Singapore's fault. It was just purely on the time it took for the produce to get to Singapore. That then kind of like put me in a position where I thought, hey, maybe I can actually grow my own produce at home. Having done a bit of research around the industry and looking at what is vertical farming, I learned very quickly that vertical farming was very conceptual, but more importantly, the traditional farming is having a very large impact on our environment. And again, it's not the farmer's fault. It's just because of the centralized farming systems that we have around the world and the time that it takes to get to the produce to the end consumer. Some facts around the leafy greens that we're growing globally right now, we're wasting as much as 70% just getting it to our end consumer. That means that 70% of deforestation for leafy green farming is happening just to waste, which is crazy. The other thing as well is we did a study of getting produce from the east coast of Australia to Singapore, and that's taking 7.2 kilos of carbon emission just to get 1 kilo of lettuce to Singapore. 6.8 of that is just on logistics. Again, it's obscene. So it went initially from trying to figure out how I grow my own lettuce to how do we reinvent the way that we're producing food. Now, we talk about the necessity of vertical farming, and at Sustena, we believe that vertical farming is very necessary to disrupt the products that are being distributed across the world, which is creating the food waste, which is creating these large carbon emissions. And the philosophy that what we have in Sustena, you quoted our strawberries, we're growing the products here in Singapore and in Hong Kong and in Malaysia that are typically grown from abroad and then shipped into those markets. So it's a very different way of running our business. We don't grow lettuce just as a single product. We actually grow it as a mix, for example. We focus on superfoods like kale, so we can start to think about quality over quantity, because being a superfood, we can consume less to get the same nutritional value. Especially in a post-COVID world, we see the communities are becoming more concerned about where their produce is coming from and the health aspects to those products. So, you know, I think there is a growing trend around growing locally, but in places like Singapore and Hong Kong where land is scarce, then this is very, very necessary. This industry is very necessary, right? Because especially 1% in Singapore of its land is used for farming. Now, Malaysia, for example, has an abundance of land, but the limitation is the products that we can grow outdoors in Malaysia because of the air temperature and humidity. This is where indoor farming will play a part in the future ecosystem, where it will grow the stuff that can't grow locally or the seasonal products. And then thereby the local farmers can start to rethink the way that they're creating their products to be consumed by the community again.
You know, Benjamin, when I hear the words like kale, right, immediately I start thinking of a more premium product offering. So what is the pricing strategy that Sustainer is looking at? Are you aiming to make your products cheaper than comparable imports, or are you aiming for that premium market?
Our strategy is definitely to compete with imports. That's how we play to win. So growing indoors is expensive. Let's face it, the cost of electricity, rent, manpower, for example. All of these costs typically you need to offset with the critical mass that you can produce and the price that you can sell it at. Now, because we compete with imports, that price point is always going to be high. So what we do is exclusively compete with those imports, thereby the price points are much higher, even if the community wants to source it from abroad, because of the logistics and the distributors and everyone taking their cut along the way, it's always going to be a higher price point. When we first entered into Singapore, our kale was as much as 30% cheaper than some of those imports.
So it's important to have to compete with the imports, right, at the end of the day, because that's still it's from what we've talked about so far, that seems to be the target market there. But what are you doing in terms of scale? Are you able to scale this up and export, or is it predominantly for the local market?
From an ESG angle, we grow in country for country. Now, I spoke a little bit earlier about the fact that we're wasting so much food just shipping it across the world and creating these vast amounts of carbon footprint around that logistics. So by growing it closer to the community, we're actually producing a zero-mile product. This is why we call it a zero-mile product, is because the kale that Malaysia is now consuming would typically need to come from Australia or even as far as the States, right? So what we're doing is we're disrupting that value chain by growing the stuff that can't grow locally, exclusively. In the future, could we potentially pivot into growing pharmaceutical, medicinal, cosmetics, for example, that has a much longer shelf life? Then they're the kind of products that we could potentially do into the future. But the low-hanging fruit for us right now, and especially on reducing down on our farming footprints as our communities grow across the world, reducing down our carbon emissions around farming footprints, it's kind of a no-brainer for us to focus on these leafy greens to start, because they are the most perishable product that we have in shelf right now.
And Benjamin, let's talk about expansion. You started in Singapore, expanded to Hong Kong, and then in Malaysia in 2020. Could you give us some context here as to the rough revenue split between these three markets to give us context of your respective size in these different markets?
So I can't share the actual numbers, but yeah, we started in Singapore with a very humble 10,000 square feet. Now we're growing with 50,000 square feet. We actually scaled up through the COVID crisis here in Singapore and the limitations of that being not being able to get the construction done, because for us, we're a brick and mortar business. We need to actually put the infrastructure into these buildings so we can create critical mass, thereby revenue. So 2020 did slow down things for us. I think it slowed the whole world down. And, you know, despite those challenges that we had, both in Singapore and Hong Kong, we still managed to double our revenue from 2019 to 2020. And that was purely with the same produce that we were growing in 2019, but being able to allocate it into more retail footprints, thereby connecting with the consumer, building better brand equity with the consumer. But we also, through our retail platforms, we get higher margins as well on our product. Singapore is at 50,000 square feet. We also have 25,000 square feet in Hong Kong, which has been under operations for about 2 years now. And we're proud to announce that we've just launched into Malaysia as well at the Kajang site, which is actually installed. We've got our farm installed in one of our partners' central depots, which is Dairy Farm International. I think this is an important partnership for us. Our very first retail partner was Dairy Farm, and we've had fantastic growth with them, both in Singapore and Hong Kong. But being able to put our actual asset within their central depot just shows the versatility of Sustenance model, being able to stand on its own and also being able to partner with the likes of Dairy Farm to, you know, reduce down barriers of entry and, I guess, exposure when we enter into new markets.
I've been speaking with Benjamin Swan, CEO and co-founder of Sustainer Agriculture. Keep it here to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kunnison. This morning, I'm speaking with Benjamin Swan, CEO and co-founder of Sustainer Agriculture, a controlled environment farming company out of Singapore that has expanded to Hong Kong and Malaysia. In 2019, you told CNBC that your EBITDA margins were about between 40 to 50%. That's quite impressive. Is that still the case today?
I'd say, you know, a lot has changed for the industry, and the way that you measure EBITDA for businesses is very different. We've learned a lot about how we become more proficient in our growing techniques, being able to get right down to the unit economics of exactly what product throughout its different life cycle is adding cost and really where we need to innovate. We've done a fantastic job in that space. You know, we've even in the last 16 months, we've been able to reduce our utilities costs as much as 48% by vertically integrating our technology stack. So, you know, in the past, we weren't getting the results we needed through our partners. So we were kind of pushed into this position or a strategic inflection and having to create our own technology. So the EBITDA numbers, the way that we measure that has changed a lot. But we have certainly become more proficient in the way that we measure performance and, more importantly, identify where are the areas that we need to innovate? What are the areas that we need to cut in order to become more proficient? And obviously for us, getting the cost parity with outdoor farms is the ultimate goal. It just opens up more variety of products that we can grow for those communities.
EBITDA obviously is a bit more technical in nature, but what about your gross margins then? What are the rough numbers we're looking at here?
Again, it's a little bit difficult for me to share the exact numbers of how they've kind of evolved over time. But the margins are growing based on the fact that we're reducing down our operating costs in the chill water that we use, the electricity that we use, also the manpower that we're allocating to the actual farm is all reducing significantly.
And how much does utilities constitute of your running costs overall?
So the utilities costs, when we think about electricity, chill water, and the facility, the chill water cost is quite small. The bulk of the cost is in the rental and the electricity consumption.
Will future margin expansion come from the pricing side of things?
I think the pricing is generally fixed because the market is quite saturated with certain products that are coming from abroad. We don't want to go in as a premium. One of the things that I learned very early in my career in the corporate world was that people won't subscribe to sustainability unless it's cheaper, more accessible, and the quality is the same, if not better. So it's more about how do we figure out how do we have more production within our space so we can maintain the same price point, but with more critical mass makes us more profitable. So there's a lot of areas where we can focus on here. And drawing back to the point on the unit economics, that provides signals for us in where we need to innovate. Robotics, for example, reducing down on manpower costs, or plant physiology, being able to understand how do we start to work with seed companies to edit seeds so we can make them more bespoke to indoor environments. Because the thing is, every seed that is in the market today is somewhat edited to make it more resilient to temperature change, malnutrition, or pests. Now, we don't have those constraints inside of our room. Thereby, we can start to edit these seeds back to focus on things like nutrition, taste, higher yield. So it's actually about figuring out how we grow more with the same or grow more with less.
Right. If I've got this right, Benjamin, Sustainer broke even in 2018. We were talking about earnings earlier through EBITDA. How has COVID-19 impacted the profitability of the company?
So we're a young scale-up company, and we're a brick-and-mortar business. We have a very capable group team. which is our topco, which is effectively there to support the expansion across the region, supporting those innovations necessary to get all the operating entities to higher profitability. 2020 slowed us down. I haven't actually set foot in Malaysia, and we still managed to complete the construction of the Kajang site without having to set foot over there, which I think is a testament to the team here in Sustenir in Singapore. So, you know, it did slow us down a little bit, but the silver lining of COVID is that communities are becoming a lot more aware and demanding food that's not only traceable, but is more healthy for them. Which is really important, and that's really what we're here to do, is to serve communities with produce that is safe, traceable, ethically grown, and 100% clean. Now, we're seeing in the last 3-4 months, 30% month-on-month growth, and that's literally just by unlocking the assets that we have under management right now. We're seeing that governments around the world are becoming a lot more active and trying to figure out how do they create food resilience. You know, food resilience in the past meant partnering with neighboring countries to secure produce. Now, when borders shut down, we start to think about how do we produce this locally? And this is definitely where indoor farming can play a significant part in food resilience for countries around the world.
All right. And Benjamin, am I correct to assume that you are profitable at this juncture, since we were talking about EBITDA margins earlier?
So at this point, we are continually scaling. So every time we scale a new facility, there's a point of burn where you ramp up the operations, the manpower that goes in. So we're a scaling company. At a consolidated level, we're not profitable yet, but we do have a very clear pathway to profitability. And it's simply by just scaling our footprint further into the region.
So this is obviously a very CapEx heavy business, right? And you've talked to us about setting up facilities, you know, in three countries. You raised $15.5 million in Series A funding. Are you looking to raise more funds soon, or is that enough funding for now?
Well, at the end of this year, we're actually going to be raising a Series B. We're in discussions already with some potential key partners to lead that round. So that's very exciting for us, given that, you know, we've gone through a lot as a company. We've had to pivot in certain areas. We've become a lot more resilient as a team and built our system so it can quite literally be scaled without us having to set foot in that country. I think this is, even though things didn't scale from a commercial standpoint, from a revenue standpoint, we use that time wisely to continue to improve our system. So it just made us more ready for when we're actually ready to bring in those new funds and scale this across the region.
Right. And with the current funding you have, what's the burn rate you're looking at? What kind of timeline do you have left with the funding you have?
So from a burn rate, again, it's hard for me to disclose those numbers. But we have investors on board that believe in the company, and there's no point where we would have to go into solvency, for example. And the timeline for us right now is to open up the Series B by the end of the year. So we have runway, and we're highly confident that at the end of the year, we can definitely close that Series B.
What other markets are you guys looking at, Benjamin? Are you looking to maybe, because you've really picked up some of the urban areas in Southeast Asia, Singapore, where you've also got Hong Kong. Are you looking to other urban areas like Jakarta or Bangkok, perhaps?
Absolutely. So effectively, every major city across Asia Pacific that has a high dependency on imported produce is where we can instantly go in and play to win.
Right. And will you be using the partner model like you did in Malaysia with the, was it Dairy Farms?
I think, you know, the partnership that we built with DFI was pre-COVID. Post-COVID, it's opened up a lot of opportunities for Sustenir, especially in how our model works. Now, I've designed this system to quite literally plug and play into any building across the world. We have a lot of property REITs, developers coming to us saying, you know, post-COVID, we have a lot of space that we can't rent. Can you come and take the space, you know? So not only with partners like DFI, but with property REITs, food services, the post-COVID world has created a lot of opportunities specifically around this food resilience, because for food services, for example, if they're relying on produce to come from Australia and the borders shut down, then they can't serve their customers, right? So they want to create that resilience as well in the continuity of supply of the produce required for them to make their business.
Right. And as we wrap up, Benjamin, let's talk a little bit about the what the future could look like. Now, you've got some big backers, including Temasek Holdings. What are the expectations that your partners and investors have from their investment? What kind of returns are they expecting?
Obviously, they want to see the same returns as any other business. And we're here to make a profit. I mean, we're not a charity. But it doesn't mean that you can't run a good business and also have good returns for our shareholders. So, you know, we really try and make the right decisions that can get this business to a point where it is very profitable. Thereby, funding will be much easier to obtain and it starts spinning that wheel where we can just exponentially grow at that point. I like to say that we're a business that makes profit with purpose. Again, we're not a charity. We are here to make money and we're here to change the world while we're doing it.
And is there a hurdle rate from the investors at this juncture?
I think the industry is quite new still. So generally the market is still kind of waiting for some success stories to see a very profitable, like even at a break even standpoint, I don't believe there's any vertical farm in the world that has broken even yet. And it's not to say that it can't happen. I mean, we are in a sunrise industry and every day we're learning something new about this industry. The reality is that growing outdoors and taking the techniques of outdoor and plugging it into a space that has no natural light, no ventilation, it just simply doesn't work. So we had to reinvent the way that growing happens. And effectively we're creating a new center of excellence around how plants react to environments because we're creating clean data around how plants react to environments. So, you know, indoor farms can really create the future of food production, both indoors and outdoors, through the center of excellence that we're generating.
But on that note, though, Benjamin, I'm sure they've got their own exit plans in the long term. Does that exit look like, is that going to be an IPO or something like that? Is that something that's been communicated to you?
Obviously, we try and create events where our shareholders can get liquidity. An IPO is one way of doing that, but we're trying to do what's right for the company. And if staying private for, you know, a bit longer is necessary in order for us to put us in a better position to then go public, then we kind of play that by ear. It's a decision that we make at the board. And for me, it's not about getting an exit. It's about trying to change the way that things are being done so we can create a more resilient future.
And I presume that this is, because it's still very early, you're calling it a sunrise industry. Even if you do go public, this is many, many years looking forward.
Only time will tell. if next week it just makes complete sense and the board comes together and says, hey, we should go for this, and it will help the company propel forward, then we'll make that decision. But we don't have any like clear timelines on when that has to happen.
Right. Benjamin, thank you so much for your time this morning. It's been a pleasure speaking.
Excellent. Great chatting with you.
I've been speaking with Benjamin Swan, CEO and co-founder of Sustainer Agriculture, and you've been listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kunnison for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.